are in, online, or via podcast. Thanks for joining me for Big Ideas. Hello, I'm Paul Barclay. Most would agree that the welfare of animals is important and should be safeguarded. But should that protection be extended and their rights formally recognised? In this edition, highlights of the latest Intelligence Squared debate that animal rights should trump human interests. Speaking on the affirmative, we have Paul De Gelder, a shark attack survivor, Philip Wallen, philanthropist, and Ruth Hatton, animal rights lawyer. On the negative team, James Bourne, a medical researcher, Catherine Marriott from the Australian beef industry, and ethicist Leslie Canold. Time is short, let's get to it. First up is Paul De Gelder. He was a Navy diver who lost his arm and leg in a shark attack in Sydney Harbour. He's now a committed environmentalist and animal rights advocate. Paul De Gelder.
Animal rights. Why do animals even need rights? Aren't we the all-powerful, omnipotent, intellectual superiors of the realm? Isn't that who we are? Seriously. We trash the land, we poison the water, we pollute the air, and we kill the animals. We are the boss. That's why animals need rights. To protect them from us. We spread across the earth like an army of soldier ants, consuming all in our path, multiplying, consuming, multiplying again. We've gotten far too big for our boots. We need help. If we're not careful, we are going to reap what we sow, and it's getting to the point where that's inevitable if we don't change. Now, when I was a kid, I loved animals. I grew up watching David Attenborough documentaries, and I would have watched them all day if I could. And not much has changed, really. My love for nature and for animals has led me down an interesting path, a path where I've been bitten on the face by a dog, I've been kicked by kangaroos, bitten by snakes, bitten by possums, attacked, eaten, and nearly killed by a shark. And yet, I still love animals. My best mate is a dog. I relocate spiders and snakes instead of killing them. I'm a wildlife warrior ambassador for Steve Irwin's Australia Zoo and Hospital. I travel the world and make shark documentaries to expose the world to them so I can share the beauty that I see. I went to Africa last year to expose the amazing work done by the rangers there to protect animals from humans and their interests. The interests in making money. Seems like everything comes second to human interests. Now, being a mainly coastal population here in Australia, we love to eat fish. Biggie? No biggie. 90% of the world's large fish have been decimated in just the last 50 years. 90%. That's insane. And what do? We build super trawlers so we can catch more fish and sharks and dolphins and turtles indiscriminately. Well, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it right, huh? Even if it means killing ourselves. And I think that's the point that people just don't seem to understand. What we are doing to this planet and to the animals is slowly but surely killing us. And yet we keep doing it. Shark nets, drum lines, have been scientifically proven not to improve any safety in the oceans whatsoever, and yet we deploy them every year. Tens of thousands of harmless, protected, and vulnerable animals are killed on these every year so the government can lie to us and give us the illusion of being safe. We're our own worst enemies. We need protection from ourselves because of our interests. Raccoon dogs in China being stunned with electricity and then skinned alive for fur coats. Japanese killing and capturing dolphins for our entertainment. Battery hens sick and dying in cages for our eggs. Sows that never stand up and exist solely so that they can provide food for their young to provide food for our breakfast. Japanese whaling fleets, Canadian seal slaughter, pilot whales in the Faroe Islands being slaughtered, Indonesian palm oil, killing orangutans, animals that we love, wiping out bird habitat, commercial fisheries wiping out and raping the oceans the world over. If I have to disgust you to make you realize that animal rights are far more important than human interest, then I will, in the hope that you might join the fight in fighting for even more animal rights. On the Central Coast just a couple of weeks ago, six harmless dusky whaler sharks were found buried in the sand with their fins sliced off. And this would have been done while they were still alive. Now imagine that was six dogs with their legs cut off, or six koalas with their heads cut off. I swim with these animals. I'm enamored with their beauty, and I'm so blessed to actually get the opportunity to share their space. I treasure those moments. And some waste of human took that experience away from me and everyone else and the lives of these sharks for their interest in a couple of bucks. It's not right. Are you aware that some of the products that we use on a daily basis are tested on animals? Small, fluffy, cute animals stuffed in cages. Skincare, hair care products, soaps. What gives us the right? I find it very hard to believe that anyone in this room would freely admit to being okay with that. How would you feel knowing that that eye sting free shampoo that you used before you came here was tested on a small furry animal just to see if it works? How many times do you think they got it wrong and burnt out a bunny's eyeballs? It is not right. We need our toothpaste, our soap, our hair care products tested on animals, though. So we know they're safe for our consumption. We don't know what's in them. How do we know that they're not going to harm us? Shouldn't that raise alarm bells just itself? It's not right. It's not a right. It's not a right to go and surf in an ocean with no sharks in it. It's not right to have a cow chained up for all of its life, never seeing freedom. It's not right to eat the planet out of tuna, which is happening right now. It is not right to slice open the throat of a cow and let it bleed and suffer so you can appease your God with animal sacrifices. What we do to these animals isn't just unethical, it's disgusting. And I have to believe that our compassion is so much stronger than our interest, because our compassion is what makes us human. We might be the all-powerful, omnipresent, intellectual superiors of the realm, but all that means is that we hold in our little hands the responsibility of care for all that lays before us. That is not a necessity. Sorry, that is not an interest. That is a necessity. Now, let's not forget that before all we have left is necessity. Thank you.
Well, there's a passionate appeal from a man who has every reason not to make it. And now to hear in response the first speaker for the negative, Associate Professor James Bourne. He's a medical researcher working with primates. His research is exploring neurological regenerative therapies for babies with brain injuries. He's a senior fellow with the federal government's National Health and Medical Research Council. Please welcome Professor James Bourne.
Thank you and good evening. Like many of you here tonight, I am appalled at our age of factory farming, our willful blindness to exploitation, our rampant self-interest as a species, and the seemingly inevitable destruction of every sphere of our environment. But like all scientists, I'm also an optimist. I hold true that medical research using animal models, and let's be clear, I mean testing or experimenting on animals themselves, is necessary in many areas of medical research. If humanity wishes to improve life, that's life not only for humans, but for animals as well. There are two points I'm grateful to convey to you tonight. One, the use of some animals in medical research remains necessary. Remembering, for every monkey in research, over 4 million animals are used in the food and dairy industry. And secondly, medical research on animals should only occur within a regulated ethical framework directed at the welfare of the animal themselves. I find myself here tonight after a readily sudden and unexpected journey that began recently within the scientific community in Australia, when we heard of a Greens private members bill in the Senate to ban the importation of primates for research purposes. As a scientist whose work utilizes monkeys, I knew that a ban on importation would lead very rapidly to a level of inbreeding in Australian facilities and would render research impossible and force it into countries with less known and unregulated practices. I was motivated to enter the political debate. Despite the woes and wrongs of our contemporary age, reason is still the best chance humanity has to right wrongs and improve the world. But reason always comes off second best in the face of fear and suspicion. Fear and suspicion characterizes much of the debate about animals in research and is cloaked in deliberate and willful misinformation. Images of horrific animal experiments undertaken in the 1950s regularly feature today in animal rights literature, even though these experiments have been outlawed for many years. The bill, defeated as it was, recycled many myths about animal experimentation. Dangerous myths that computers and petri dishes can replace animals, that experiments inflict unnecessary cruelty and suffering, that baby monkeys are every day ripped from the arms of their dead mothers by poachers and then traded through unregulated corrupt profiteering to end up being tortured by mad scientists addicted to outdated scientific models. The fact that a proposal of this kind can even be seriously considered today is evidence that the scientific community has not only been cowed into burying its collective head, but as a body politic, we are only a few steps away from reverting to a darker age where the quality of life for both humans and animals will be considerably lessened. Indeed, while humanity is making ever more incredible scientific advances, regular public polling shows a growing and alarming public disagreement about basic scientific facts on human evolution, the safety of vaccines, and whether humans caused climate change is real. But let me indulge you here in some very recent examples why I believe non-human primate research is important. Recently, researchers infected monkeys with the Zika virus because it is the closest scientists can get to understanding in real time what is happening when humans are infected with the virus. In 2015, the world witnessed the worst epidemic of the Ebola virus to date. Monkeys were treated with an antibody isolated from a human Ebola sufferer, and then went on to not develop the virus and had complete protection against the lethal dose of the virus. And yet, opponents of research, animal research, argue that knowledge gained from monkey research is inapplicable to human. This claim is simply false and utterly dangerous. Anyone that argues that insights gained from animals are meaningless is either poorly informed or knowingly untruthful. The political reality, however, is that imagery and language peddled by animal research opponents, and of course, is utterly confronting. The facts, if you care to accept them, are first, non-human primates used for research in Australia are sourced from regulated breeding facilities overseas. They are not taken from the jungle. Second, all animal research in Australia is conducted under the strictest of scrutiny and follows the principles of reduction, refinement, and replacement, known as the three R's. Under these principles, animal-based research is only approved by a qualified ethics committee comprising of members of the lay persons, welfare organisations, and veterinarians. Third, non-human primates are used only in exceptional circumstances when no other model is possible, as a last resort. When finding an answer simply cannot be provided by another animal model, cell-based system, computer modelling, or human experimentation. While we make incredible advances every day in computer technology, there is currently, unfortunately, no alternative that can replicate what we need to examine in the animal model. And I personally look forward to the day when my research is not dependent on animals. Furthermore, every researcher understands the risk and great care of duty and the pain and distress that must be avoided when designing a study. So you might find my work abhorrent, but it is framed in the highest possible duty of care to the animal, and it seeks to address the critical challenges in global health. If we proceed down a path of banning animal research, it is not only the science that will suffer, but more importantly, the patients that won't have the treatment. I believe in the utilitarian sense, much like our speakers tonight, in suffering that animals are equals. So I cannot and never will defend factory farming, zoos or circuses, but please consider the facts that I have given you tonight on the fact that medical research involving animals is essential to Australians here tonight. Thank you very much.
So it may be that James has convinced some of you that even if animals have rights, you should at least make exceptions for medical research. But do rights actually extend that far, or should they circumscribe even what he's had? Well, Ruth Hatton will join us now. Ruth is an animal lawyer and an animal nutritionist. She's a member of the Voiceless Legal Advisory Council and senior policy officer with the national not-for-profit legal centre, the Animal Law Institute. And I should say that the growth of animal law in Australia has been one of the most interesting areas that's taken place in the last decade or so. Please join with me in welcoming Ruth Hatton.
Thank you. Slicing off beaks, chopping off tails, hacking of genitalia, torture, imprisonment. Each of these things and more are done to animals to further human interest. Each of these things are sanctioned by law. Australian law regards animals as property, much like chairs, cars, books, houses, computers, inanimate objects with no sense of feeling. Animals feel, of course they do. They are sentient beings. They feel pain. They feel joy, hunger, loneliness, cold, heat, fear, stress. They form social bonds, claim ownership, fight for their lives. They are aware, and this is scientifically proven. Yet Australian law does not recognise animals' ability to feel, at least not in a way that respects their inherent value or protects them from harm at the hands of human beings. Our laws permit suffering. They don't sufficiently penalise, and they are not properly enforced. People who engage in the farming of animals are permitted to inflict cruel practices on farm animals for the sake of human interest. Normal animal husbandry practices are allowed. If you're a farmer, you have a defence to a charge of animal cruelty because the law allows you to cut off the beaks, teeth, tails and genitalia of chickens, cows, pigs and sheep without pain relief. You are allowed to confine animals in a way that prohibits any significant movement for extended periods of time. You can transport animals for long periods of time without adequate space, water, feed and attention. And to countries where the laws protect them even less than they do here. You can prevent natural behaviours such as chickens dust bathing, and of course you can kill. Our laws allow the infliction of disease on and imprisonment of monkeys, cats, dogs, rabbits, sheep and more. People who engage in scientific research upon animals believe they are doing necessary work because it saves human lives. Lawmakers like us to believe that animals used in research are protected by law. For example, Queensland's Animal Care and Protection Act seeks to ensure the use of animals for scientific purposes is accountable, open and responsible. Being accountable, open and responsible does not protect animals from suffering, and nor do the three R's. There is a model code of practice which governs the use of animals in research. It too does not protect animals. Pregnant sheep subject to injections, their fetuses delivered prematurely, with their hearts removed while still alive. Greyhounds given dental implants and then killed. 450-gram weights dropped onto rats' exposed brains for study into long-term consequences of traumatic brain injury. Kittens deafened one day after birth, used in cochlear implant experiments and then killed. Marmosets killed for eye experiments. And they call this necessary. And may I point out, these are experiments that happened today. They are not from the 1950s. Study after study after study, suffering after suffering after suffering, death after death after death. Thank goodness we have the law encouraging accountability, openness and transparency. Some think that by engaging in ethical consumption of meat, animals live and die without unnecessary suffering. Practices that occur in intensive farming, like debeaking, can still occur in organic farming. And most importantly, animals who are raised in a free-range or organic environment die in the same way as animals who are intensively raised. All animals raised for food are killed in the same slaughterhouses. The same slaughterhouses where animals can suffer beatings and abuse. Stress associated with fear of death, brought on by the sight, sound and smell of others having their lives taken from them. Incompetent slaughter practices and ultimately death. To have one's life taken involuntarily can never be ethical. How is any of this necessary just for the sake of humans eating meat? Some believe health is a human interest that trumps the sanctity of animal life. Yet diseases including stroke, heart disease, type 2 diabetes and certain cancers are today associated with excess meat consumption. Humans do not need meat to be healthy. I am living proof of this. Humans want to continue eating meat because they think it tastes good. Taste is not necessity. Every year in Australia, we kill over 600 million farm animals for human consumption alone. Every year, we torture 7 million dogs, cats, native mammals, that's our koalas, our wallabies, our possums and our wombats, primates, mice, rats, sheep and domestic fowl for research and teaching, all under the guise of necessity. We too are animals, yet unlike our furry animal friends, we are recognised and protected under law for the living, breathing, feeling beings that we are. This wasn't always the case, at least for those subject to slavery in Britain and the US, and women who under English and US law surrendered everything, including their legal identity upon marriage. Both slaves and women were considered property. They had no standing in the eyes of the law. They were inferior and not worthy of those who thought they were superior. The plight of animals today mirrors the plight of slaves and women yesterday. Many human beings believe they are superior to animals. It is this speciesist, this discriminatory belief that is the cause of the unjust treatment inflicted on animals every day because humans believe they are better than animals and that as a superior species, we can use and abuse animals as we see fit for our own benefit without recognising the inherent value and moral rights of animals. In 2000, an Indian High Court asked the question, if humans are entitled to fundamental rights, why not animals? The court considered the plight of circus animals and found that those animals were beings entitled to dignified existence and humane treatment sans cruelty and torture. Humans are not the measure of all things. Animals have inherent value and moral rights. The fundamental right to be treated with respect as an individual with inherent value must be enshrined in law, so too their right to safety, life, freedom and food. These fundamental rights should trump human interests, such as the consumption of animals and their parts, animal forms of entertainment, breeding of cats and dogs and animal research for so-called human benefit. These are not necessary or justifiable interests, not when you consider the suffering that they cause to our fellow animals. Animals should not suffer for human benefit. Animals should not suffer for the mistakes of the human race. Animal rights should trump human interests. Thank you.
Ruth Hatton, an animal rights lawyer. On RN or online at abc.net.au, you're with Big Ideas, and we're halfway through the latest Intelligence Squared debate that animal rights should trump human interests. The next speaker for the affirmative is Catherine Marriott. She's the Chief Executive of the Kimberley and Pilbara Cattlemen's Association. She's a Commissioner for the Australian Government's Centre for International Agricultural Research, and she spent 6 years in Indonesia for Meat and Livestock Australia. Catherine Marriott.
I am passionate about living systems, the environment, animal welfare, and making this planet a better place for future generations. My name is Catherine, and my background is in livestock production and enhancing animal welfare globally. According to PETA, animal rights means that animals are not ours to use for food, clothing, or experimentation. In other words, no pets. Sorry, Paul. Your dog that you love is gone. No seeing eye dogs for blind people. Nothing. Animal welfare and animal rights are very different, and both result in very different outcomes. Living a life completely separate from animals or supporting animal rights actually flies in the face of having a system that is balanced and ethical. You see, everything in this, on this planet is inextricably linked. So to completely cut out a section of this cycle means that inevitably the system will collapse. Where I come from in Broome, the grasslands need to be managed so that they can thrive and provide native flora and fauna with an environment that they can prosper. Without management and without pastoralists managing that land, wildfires and predators run rampant, ruining ecosystems for the future to enjoy. Grazing animals are part of a system that improves the natural environment. Recent research shows that cattle grazing perennial pastures that we have a lot of in the Kimberley and the Pilbara region sequester carbon into the soil, which enables us to sustain life, promote biodiversity, and improve environmental health. Raise your hand if you believe that animals should be treated with respect. Awesome. Absolutely. I agree. And that shows that we're all on the same team. Work with me here, guys. Work with me. Before I go any further, I wanted to acknowledge my opponents tonight and thank them all for coming in. I believe in this world we are all very lucky to have an opinion. In Australia, particularly around food, we are very lucky to have one. There are many places in the world that are not as blessed as us, where families don't have the luxury to even think about tonight's question. They're just busy trying to survive. Can you imagine not knowing where your family's next meal is coming from? Your baby is crying because he's hungry. You've got a buffalo that you can potentially give milk to your baby on. Now, this is the daily ritual, not only for families on a daily basis, but from month to month, year to year, in many developing nations around the world. Animals in developing nations actually serve a purpose as a bank, which enables them to utilise that money when they sell that animal to educate their children, which leads to bringing families and eventually nations out of poverty. We have 2 billion people worldwide living below the poverty line, and there's much, much research that shows that eating meat in small amounts will start to develop the brain. So sitting here in Australia with our full gut and our wet throat, are we willing to say that we're more important because we've made it and we try and prevent developing nations from having that same access to meat and animal products that we have had? In market, I was helping people improve animal welfare practices, improving the nutrition of their animals, and I was able to not only improve animal welfare, but also human welfare with the people and the families that I was working with. I am very proud of the difference that Australian livestock industries have made to animal welfare globally. You know, when I was working in Indonesia, we made a lot of changes recently after the Animals Australia expose in the live export industry. And one of the big changes that we made is that all of the abattoirs that I worked in Indonesia now have stun guns. Now, those stun guns are not only processing Australian cattle, but also Indonesian cattle. Now, if we hadn't been in market, of 108 countries globally, Australia is the only one that exports cattle live that actually follows on with after-sales service to improve the animal welfare, to improve our knowledge with animal welfare globally. We have capacity to share that and improve animals internationally, not just here in Australia. Now, back to our friends sitting opposite. The footage and videos that you'll see on their websites are indeed shocking, and I'm going to tell you a little secret. If what is shown on their websites was actually representative of animal agriculture in Australia, I would be there. I would be on that side, because it's horrific. But as much as they are going to try and tell you this is mainstream, I can officially assure you it is indeed not. As in anything in life, there are people who let us down. There are farmers, abattoirs, exporters, transporters that don't do the right thing, and we need to work together to stop those involved in animal mistreatment, because I can assure you these people are indeed a minority. I don't condone animal cruelty of any kind in any culture, and I'm pleased to work for an organisation, the Kimberley Pilbara Cattlemen's Association, that holds animal welfare and environmental management as two of our underlying pillars. I work in the beef and therefore food industry, and I have a keen interest in the balance of all living things. You know, I have a friend, Lucinda Giblett is her name. She runs a charity called Stella Violets. Now, she has been vegetarian and verging on vegan for a number of years, but she was getting more and more sick. She continued to go to doctors. That's okay. I'm telling you the truth. So she was getting weaker and weaker and more sick. She went to doctors and naturopaths to try and figure out what was actually going on. And the doctors and naturopaths said to her, you need to have some animal protein in your diet. So she started drinking bone broths and eating red meat. Now, the charity that she runs is Stella Violets. It is all about ethical food production. She has organic gardens that she educates people with. Are we willing to let Lucinda suffer through ill health rather than actually let her eat some meat and then contribute to the sustainability of the world? Should animal welfare be paramount in all that we do? Absolutely it should. As I said earlier, nature is cruel, but we don't have to be. We are part of a system that prevents unnecessary suffering for people, animals, and the planet, and I am proud of the role that Australian farmers play in improving animal welfare globally.
Now, it might have been a little bit of an overstretch to say that we're all on the same side. I suspect that there's some division of opinion. But there is that image, too, to hold in mind the poor family with just a goat or a cow and that single sustenance and what implications it could have for them. Well, I'm sure that Philip Woolen is going to have a view about what it means in the context of animal rights for those people as well as for us. As you heard, he's a former merchant banker who became a philanthropist, dedicated to supporting both animals and people through his charity called the Winsome Constance Kindness. Philip has funded shelters, sanctuaries, marine conservation and native fauna protection. And here's the interesting thing, given what we just heard from Catherine. Philip became a vegan after visiting a corporate client's abattoir. That was the trigger for him. He's an honorary fellow of the Oxford Centre of Animal Ethics. Would you please welcome Philip Woolen?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. The great historian Barbara Tuchman defined folly as acting against our own best interests. Denying animal rights is folly because it acts against human interests. Our opponents are not defending human interests, they are protecting vested interests and trampling the rights of powerless animals. Now, in human history, only 100 billion human beings have ever lived. 7 billion people are alive today. And we humans torture and kill 2 billion sentient, living, loving animals every week. And we stab and suffocate 1 billion ocean animals every 3 hours. If we killed at the same rate, we would be wiped out in 12 days. The oceans are dying in our time, wiped out by animal agriculture. By 2048, all our fisheries will be dead, the lungs and the arteries of the earth. On this basis, no child under the age of 5 will ever reach retirement age, if that does not chill your blood. 10,000 entire species are wiped out every year because of the actions of one. And we now face the 6th mass extinction in cosmological history. If any other organism did this, a biologist would call it a virus. It is a crime of unimaginable proportions. And it's not just about animal rights. It's also about human wrongs. So, are human interests really being served in these gulags? In live animal exports, where our animals in the Bassatine slaughterhouse in Cairo, where I've been funding, have their eyes stabbed out and the tendons slashed? Or on rape racks on factory farms? Or in cages of battery hens or vivisection laboratories and putty mills? And billions of chicks who are ground up alive simply because they are male? Serving human interests? My foot. Forest depletion by the livestock industry costs 3 times as much as the global financial crisis. Huntington's, Europe's largest animal lab, now admits that the correlation of man and animal toxicity data is between 5 and 25%. You get better odds from a bookie. Sir Alexander Fleming said that if he had used animals, we wouldn't have penicillin. And using animals has given us Vioxx and thalidomide. And of course, we've got cane toads, rabbits, foxes, European carp, and camels, to name but a few. Zoonotic diseases from factory farms now threaten a pandemic to rival the Black Death, which wiped out half of Europe. And meat is killing us and our economies with cancer, heart disease, osteoporosis, and diabetes. Medicare has already bankrupted the United States. They would need $8 trillion invested in treasury bills just to pay the interest, and they've got precisely zero. And now Oxford University says that our model will save $30 trillion and 8 million lives every year. Now, you would know that water is the new oil. Nations will soon be going to war over it. Underground aquifers that took millions of years to fill are now running dry. The Colorado, the Rio Grande, the Indus, and the Yellow Rivers now no longer reach the sea, sucked dry by the livestock industry, whilst 4 billion men, women, and children suffer from water scarcity. So why do I speak to you about water? Because it takes 50,000 litres of water to produce 1 kilo of beef, 1,000 litres of water to produce 1 litre of milk. 1 billion people today are hungry. 20 million people will die this year from malnutrition. Cutting meat by only 10% will feed 100 million people, and not eating animals will end human hunger forever. If everyone ate animals, we would need 2 planet Earths to feed us. We've only got one, and she is dying. And greenhouse gas pollution from livestock vastly exceeds that of transport. Planes, trains, cars, ships, lorries, the whole lot. And their methane is 24 times more potent than CO2. The Himalayan ice fields are correctly called the third pole because they irrigate half the world's population through the Ganges, Indus, Brahmaputra, Yangtze, Irrawaddy, Mekong, and the Yellow Rivers. And these glaciers are melting fast, as is the Siberian permafrost. I presented these numbers to industrialists, academics, and Nobel laureates. And I told Muhammad Yunus, after he won the Nobel, that all the good that he had done with Grameen Bank would vanish when Bangladesh drowns. To say nothing about Manila, Mumbai, Calcutta, Ho Chi Minh City, and Bangkok. No arguments at all from these great minds, but lots of arguments from the lobby groups. So Upton Sinclair was right. It is impossible to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding it. You know, we freak out when 1,000 refugees arrive on our shores. Imagine greenhouse gas emissions caused by livestock hitting 500 parts per million, or a 3-degree temperature rise, creating 100 million eco-refugees. This calamity will reshape the geopolitical landscape forever. We are facing the perfect storm. If any nation had developed weapons that could wreak such havoc on the planet, we would launch a preemptive military strike and bomb it back into the Bronze Age. So who does more for human interests? We do. Every vote tonight for the opposition is to relive a sick and cruel past where everybody dies. A vote for us means everybody wins. And paradoxically, the opposition wins too, because animal rights protect human interests. Our health, our economies, our forests, ocean, and our children. Because in the end, only 3 things matter. How deeply you loved, how gently you lived, and how gracefully you let go of things that were not meant for you. Killing was not meant for you. Animal rights is now the greatest social justice issue since the abolition of slavery. It is a revolutionary event more powerful than the Industrial Revolution, the Reformation, or anything ever conceived by Galileo, Copernicus, Einstein, Darwin, or Freud. Because it protects the most precious of all things, life. We are creating the new enlightenment, the second renaissance. Let it begin tonight here in Sydney. Thank you.
So we come to the kind of the crunch in terms of the arguments now. What is this issue in relation to rights rather than welfare? Have you heard enough about rights and what they entail? I think this is something which I'm hoping Leslie Kennold is going to unpack as she puts her argument. She's a renowned ethicist, a researcher, a writer and former vegetarian. She sits on numerous ethics boards and advisory committees in health services. Please welcome Dr. Leslie Kennold.
Side of reason and they've been the side of emotion, and I thought I was going to come up here and just give you a very dispassionate, reasoned kind of philosophical explanation, but I'm actually really pissed off now. I'm really, really angry. I do not appreciate false opposition. I do not like false analogy. I do not like false facts. I am not a vested interest, just so anyone's clear. I don't have any job based on anything. What I've got is an understanding about the real implications of giving animals rights rather than looking after their welfare. And none of that has been responded to, not by one single person on this side. We have raised some very, very serious issues here. And if we are really so out of touch that we don't know what science has done for us, and we don't know what science still needs to do for people in the developing world, that we don't care how people in the developing world eat and rely on animals, that we're really indifferent to that, it doesn't matter, I don't know this Australia. I don't know it. So I'm now going to try to settle back down and give you a more dispassionate discussion about why animal rights are not the way to look after animals. We all want to look after animals. But let's look at the facts of what we do if we give animals rights. Animal rights do not trump human interests, or to be precise, certain animal rights do not trump certain human interests. Accepting the doctrine of animal rights means we must accept that animals have a right to life and cannot be used solely as a means to human ends, no matter how worthy those ends may be. Okay, so you need to understand that. That's what it means to say animals have rights. They have a right to life, because all other rights proceed from that. So let's look at what that means to you, to your life, to people in the developing world, to sick children. Let's have a look. This is what it means. It means, in particular, there must be no experiments on animals, not one. It doesn't matter how worthy it is. Ebola, Zika, TB, malaria, nothing. That's what it means. No breeding and killing animals for food or clothes or medicine. No use of animals for labor. No hunting or fishing, even by those whose traditional practices require it to feed their family or their tribe. Talking about different cultures here. Really? We're totally indifferent? No zoos or use of animals in entertainment, which personally I don't have a problem with. As philosopher Carl Cohen notes about the claim that animals have rights, if animals have any rights, they must have the right not to be killed to advance the interests of others. So the minute you say animals have rights, what you are saying is an animal has a right to life. The human right to life is the same. Even if killing me would yield a wondrous cure for a disease cutting down billions in the prime of their lives, it would still be morally wrong to do it. Why? Because it would violate my right to life, and it would use me solely as a means to an end, rather than an end in myself. My argument is that not only does the assertion of an animal right to life lead to nonsensical and morally problematic conclusions, it is unnecessary to achieve what is required to improve the lot of animals. We do not have to give animals rights to make their lives substantially better than they are. And we need to make them substantially better than they are. In fact, we all agree on that. Indeed, pursuing it is counterproductive to what I believe should be the aim of the animal rights movement and the community at large. Building as large and strong a coalition as we can, as quickly as we can, to advocate effectively for the laws, compliance mechanisms, and individual behavioral change we need to stop the unnecessary suffering of intensively farmed animals. And we need to do that now. Before I proceed with these arguments, I want to say something about rights. As I argue in my book, The Abortion Myth, the Western obsession with rights makes it really difficult for us to see their limitations. We speak about rights as if they were the only moral value with meaning, ignoring other important moral values like responsibilities or duties. In fact, responsibilities are the counterparts to rights. You actually can't have one without the other. From mosquitoes to koalas, for Australian animals to realise a legally granted right to life, Australian farmers, Australian hunters, and Australian researchers have to accept a duty not to kill them. And Australian citizens, consumers, and patients, must refuse to eat, wear, or use food, clothes, and medicine that required an animal's death, no matter what the health benefit might accrue to them or to their children. That's what it means. We cannot use any of it. It's nonsensical. Dame Mary Warnock argues that a good reason for thinking animals don't have a right to life is because if they do, humans are duty-bound not to hunt them, but also to protect animals from being hunted by other animals. After all, why should human beings have obligations towards animals that animals don't have to humans or to each other? It's also very problematic. James and Catherine have covered this. Without descending to the depths of it, I and one of my children are very much like Lucinda, the person whose health we gave not a damn about. As it happens, many people who become vegetarian, and most people don't, many people revert. And the reason they give, and we can scoff at it, because after all, we're experts on other people's health, aren't we, is because they need to eat meat. When I was pregnant, I was anemic, severely anemic. My dreams became punctuated by steaks and burgers. In the end, I chose my obligation to my developing child on medical advice. Was this the wrong choice to make? If you don't think so, guess what? You don't believe animals have a right to life. Finally, I really think it's unnecessary. Granting animal rights wouldn't lead to just nonsensical and at times immoral outcomes. It's unnecessary to get better treatment for animals. Currently, animal rights organisations like Voiceless seek to persuade Australian consumers to abstain from animal products entirely, but they face an uphill climb. Only 1.5% of Australian households tell pollsters they are vegan or vegetarian, and this is a rate that's changed very little over the years. It's also likely to be an overestimation. There's fascinating US studies that when they ring up people and say, are you vegan or vegetarian, they go, mm-hmm, and then they say, have you eaten meat in the last 24 hours, and they go, mm-hmm. 66% of them if you ask them a week later, 60% of them if you ask them a day later. So it's not very many people who can do it. And my point about that is that we're still pushing people and making them believe wrongly that the only way they can meet their obligations to animals, and we have those obligations, is that they must become vegan. So we're telling them to do something that most people will not, cannot, won't, whatever the question is, do. But here's what they will do, and the surveys show it. They will buy cruelty-free products. They will buy free-range eggs. So what we need to do is try to think about how it is that we can most rapidly encourage change for people. Sure, we can say to people, you need to stop using animals that have been treated cruelly and intensively farmed. Absolutely, you need to do that. And then you've got an option. You don't have to eat meat or use animal products at all. Or alternately, you can choose to consume cruelty-free products. I'm out of time, so thank you very much.
Ethicist Leslie Canold, the third and final speaker for the negative in this IQ Squared debate that animal rights should trump human interests. On Big Ideas, in the few minutes remaining, a couple of comments from the audience.
Hi, good evening. My name is Jan. I'm a neurobiologist, so I use animal as a model to understand the brain development. So I would just like to say one thing from a biologist's perspective. If we human are where we are now, it's really thanks to eating meat, because that's been proven during evolution that our brain requires a lot of energy, and we got that through eating meat. The second point I would like to make, especially to Ruth, about the use of animal. Yes, it's true, we do remove parts of animals in order to model some disease, but we do it under anesthesia. We have very strict procedures and protocols that are in place to perform that. I'm sick of being portrayed as a butcher. I'm not. I have animals. I've been in animal activists in order to enhance the comfort and the way animals are kept in laboratories. And of course, I love my dog, but when my sister passed away from cancer, I was quite pleased that her life was prolonged for 5 years thanks to drugs that have been tested on animals. Thank you so much.
In 1998, the director of the National Cancer Institute in the US said, we found the cure for cancer in mice for decades. It doesn't work in humans. I'd like to invite everybody here to read the work of Dr. Ray Greek, who's a former vivisector. He's wrote a book called Sacred Cows and Golden Geese. He uses the medical industry's own data and research to show that vivisection is not only morally reprehensible, it's actually scientifically fraudulent. Secondly, the medical doctors and nutritionists in Australia are incredibly poorly trained in nutrition. Fortunately, now we are seeing the rise of a plant-powered vegan movement and vegan nutritionists. So I would invite your friend who had the issues to go and see someone who's really experienced in plant-based nutrition, because the medical doctors and nutritionists here are as brainwashed by the billion-dollar animal agriculture industries as the rest of us.
Thank you. Microphone two. Yep, microphone two.
If a shark or a lion doesn't care about my right to vote and takes my life, what compels humans, if we are, as the panel said, fellow animals, what compels humans to care about rights of animals?
I'm a vegan and I personally don't have a problem with them using the cow to provide for their families if they need to in order to survive. But here in Australia, we don't have that problem. We have alternative ways of finding food and nutrients away from animal products. So I think veganism and vegetarianism is a third world privilege that we have the option to take. So why wouldn't everyone take that? And also, you talked about how if everyone became vegan and vegetarian, that there wouldn't be enough land to feed everyone. Well, I strongly disagree with that because from what I've gathered, up to 90% of soy production goes to animal agriculture, as well as a lot of corn and grain. So all that food, as well as the land that the animals take up, could be used for food for humans.
Thank you.
So should animal rights trump human interests? In the pre-poll debate, 34% were undecided. 44% were in favour and 22% against. After hearing all the arguments, the final audience poll had a big shift in the undecided, down from 34% to 10%. For the motion, dropped from 44% down to 37%, and 53% voted against the motion that animal rights should trump human interests. Our thanks to MC Simon Longstaff and the team from the Ethics Centre, presenters of the Intelligence Squared debate series. Video of the debate in full will be posted soon on the Ethics Centre site. We'll post a link to that on the Big Ideas homepage, abc.net.au/rn. That's the program. On behalf of the production team, producers Murata Dias, Karin Zivanovits, Ian Coombe, and technical producers Peter McMurray, David LeMay, and Steve Fieldhouse, I'm Paul Barclay. Bye for now.
About the best party in town this election season. It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.